This, but I want to begin with a story. I almost hesitated to tell you this story because I feared you would think I have a warped sense of humor, but then I realized you already think that, so I don't have anything to lose. But this really comes out of a book by a woman named Lisa Rogak called Death Warmed Over, and it is a strange combination of cookbook and a sociological study of funeral meals and traditions. And she starts with this story of a dying man that's home in bed. And as he's laying there, he can smell, coming up the stairs, the aroma of his favorite treat, homemade chocolate chip cookies. And he has this thought, I have got to have one more cookie before I die. So with what little strength he has, he gets out of bed, literally rolls down the stairs, crawls into the kitchen, and he raises out a trembling hand up to the counter to get a cookie when all of a sudden, whack, and his wife hits him with a spatula and says, put that back. They're for the funeral. Now, I think that sums up the human condition, the idea that I could die happy if I just had one more cookie. And at some point, life says, no more cookies for you. How many cookies do you need to be happy? Because sometimes, the more you gain, the more you lose. And that is the main thing I want you to learn this morning as we contrast two believers with very different value systems. So in the 13th chapter, we have seen that Abram has been humbled by the trip he made to Egypt, a trip that he wished he had never actually made. And he has come back to the promised land. He has come back to Bethel, where he had built an altar, and he is calling out once again on the name of the Lord. But you'll also remember, while he is in Egypt, this trip, Pharaoh had given him great amounts of treasure and livestock. The man who came back was worth a whole lot more than the man who went down. So Genesis chapter 13, beginning in the 5th verse. Follow along in your own Bible. It says this. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, but the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Now earlier in verse 2, it says that Abram had become very wealthy. That's the very first time that the Bible mentions wealth. I think it's very significant that the very next thing that happens after the Bible mentions wealth for the very first time is this story about quarreling over possessions. Apparently, Lot had shared in Abram's Egyptian bonanza. Think about it. Everything that Lot actually had was due to Abram. And the old patriarch was clearly within his rights to just say to the young Lot, "We got a problem, so this is how it's going to be." It was the custom of that day. He was the elder. He was the patriarch. He was the leader of the family. Everything that Lot had was because of Abram. So Abram could have said, nobody would have argued or disagreed. Look, Lot, this is how it's going to be. But instead, Abram chose to be a peacemaker. Reminds me of H.A. Ironside, a wonderful old Bible scholar and preacher from the last century. And he said when he was a little boy, a story shaped his life like he will never forget. His mother had taken him to some kind of meeting at church. I'm assuming it was either a board meeting or an annual meeting. And these two leading men at the church got into such an argument that this little boy thought that they were actually going to start hitting each other. And one of the men kept shouting, "I don't care what you say, I don't care what you do, I'll have my rights." Now there was this old man in church who was partially deaf. Ironside said that he put his hand to his ear and he cupped it and he said, your rights? Is that what you said, brother? You want your rights? Brother, if you had your rights, you would be in hell. The Lord Jesus didn't come to get his rights. He came to get his wrongs, and he got them. Abram didn't stand up for his rights. And I wonder what motivated his generosity. I would suggest three possibilities, and I think that they're all part of the reason. Write this down. He put family ahead of fortune. He said, "We are brothers. Relationships are more important than rights. Lot, you and I are all we got. Everybody else from the old country is gone. We're it." I think another factor was Abram's concern about the impact of their quarrel on their pagan neighbors. Because notice the author felt it important to add, after he said that they were having a big quarrel, that the Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. I don't think that Abram was worried that if they didn't stop quarreling, the Canaanites or the Perizzites were actually going to attack them. There is no suggestion in any of the biblical texts that Abram was ever worried about his personal safety from the neighbors that were around him. I think instead, Abram was concerned about the image of his God in the eyes of his neighbors. Remember what had happened to him back in Egypt. He had tarnished the reputation of his God by his actions. And how can you listen to a man about his God when you can't trust what he says about his wife? I think one of the pledges that Abram made at that altar in Bethel was that he would never again live in such a way that pagan people are embarrassed to know about the God that he worships. I think we all need to remember that at any time brothers quarrel, the image of God is actually hurt among pagans. Third, Abram had learned from his recent mistake down in Egypt to trust God for his provision. He had learned from his Egyptian episode not to live by the popular rules of economic reason. You see, what he did down in Egypt makes perfect sense in the popular realm. There was a famine. The Nile is a big river. Go and live by the Nile. But he had learned from his mistake. So now he's in the land. Economic reasons would say, "Hey, Abram, you're the boss. Pick the best pasture for yourself." But Abram wasn't living by that kind of thinking anymore. So he comes to his nephew and he says, "Listen, as long as I stay in this land, I don't care what part of this land I stay in. So you choose the part that you want to live in." And here's what we'll see is the difference in these two brothers as it continues in verse 10. It says, Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt toward Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now, the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. By the way, did you notice that the text says nothing about Lot seeking the counsel of the Lord before he made a decision? Lot had gotten a taste of the good life down in Egypt. I don't know what his financial portfolio was when he went to Egypt, but I know what it was like when he came back. He was wealthy, and he liked that. He had tasted the good life, and he was hungry for some more. So it says, he looked up. Write this down. Lot looked up to see prosperity, that land over in the east. He noticed. It reminded him of Egypt. It says he saw the land. Now, please understand that what Moses is saying when he uses that word is the same thing that he is saying when you go all the way back into Genesis when it says that Eve saw the fruit. Doesn't mean that he just physically saw the land with his eyeballs. It means he wanted it. He desired it. It's the same idea if you go a little bit later in the Bible when you see David and he's up on a rooftop and it says that he saw a woman bathing. He didn't just physically see her. He wanted her. And you know, Lot saw this land, that it was like Egypt. He saw profitableness, not the wickedness. He saw a place not marked for judgment, a place that was made for advancement. Now, he knew the reputation because that kind of word gets around, and he knew that the men in Sodom and Gomorrah were wicked. But it looked to him like the price was worth it. It was a decision based purely on sight. He did not consider the cost it would be to his peace of mind. He did not consider the cost it would be to his family. And by the way, the great irony of this story is if Lot's great desire was to experience blessing, do you know how he could have gotten great blessing? All he had to do was bless Abram, because God said, whoever blesses Abraham will be blessed. But Lot wasn't thinking, how can I bless Abraham? Lot was thinking, how can I get blessed? He never seemed to grasp the secret of Abram's success. You see, it wasn't Abram's residence, it was his obedience. The reason Abram was wealthy, and the reason Abram was favored, and the reason Abram prospered wasn't because he lived in the best pasture land next to the best river. It was because he lived in the place that God had told him to go. And Lot, for all of the qualities that you could admire about the man, seemed to never understand that. But I want you to notice how Moses is going to contrast how Lot looked up and saw prosperity to what Abram was told by God to do. We continue in verse 14, and it says this. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I'm giving it to you. So Abram moved his tents and went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he built an altar to the Lord. By the way, you never read of Lot building an altar to the Lord. Did you notice what God said to Abram? He wanted him to look to the north, to the south, to the west, and to the east. Where did Lot go? He'd gone off to the east. God told Abram to look over to the place Lot chose. God was giving that to him as well. God was letting Abram know, you haven't lost anything. Abram might have been thinking, you know what? I've lost the only family that I've got. And I've lost some of the good pasture land. No, Abram. You have not lost any of the land. You have not lost any of your hope for family, because I'm going to make your descendants more numerous than the dust of the earth. Because Abram, my word is stronger and mightier than man's vision. You see, write this down. Abram looked up to see a promise. God told him to walk through the land as if he was already in possession of it. Here's the great irony. He would never be in possession of it in his lifetime. He would never see with the physical eye the possession of the land, but by faith, he could see it already. And as he would walk through that land, length and breadth, pitching his tent, building an altar, pitching a tent, building an altar, he was by faith claiming the land for his descendants that hadn't even yet been born. The reality of that promise would always be more real to Abram than the pressure of the present. And in this regard, here's what I want you to see. Abram and Lot represent two very kinds of believers that are different. Over in 2 Peter chapter 2, the apostle refers to Lot as he was speaking about the coming judgment. And he refers to Lot living in wicked Sodom. Three times the apostle Peter calls Lot a righteous man. Now remember that about Lot. Lot was a moral man who believed in God. But what do we remember about Lot? Some believers are remembered for all that they gained. Some are remembered for losing a lot. Paul refers to this in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning in the 12th verse. He says, if any man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. If what he has built survives, he will receive his reward. If it is burned up, he will suffer loss. He himself will be saved, but only as one escaping through the flames. Like Lot, we'll be saved, but we will not be rewarded. The eyes have it. Let me tell you another cookie story. This one is from Reader's Digest. A woman was at the airport. She went into one of those little shops in the terminal to buy a bag of cookies for her flight. She went to her gate to wait for her flight to board and take off. A few minutes later, after she had been sitting down, she noticed this rustling noise beside her. She looks over, and this man who was sitting next to her has opened up her bag of cookies, reaches in, and takes one out, and is starting to eat her cookie. She couldn't believe this. What is he doing? So she reaches in and grabs a cookie. A couple minutes later, he has the gall to go in for another cookie. She can't believe this. So she reaches in and grabs a cookie. Who is this guy? Well, this goes on until there's only one cookie left, and the guy reaches in, grabs the cookie, looks at her, and breaks it in half, and hands her half of the cookie. She can't believe this jerk. She takes it. She eats it. She gets the call to board her flight. She gets on the plane. She's sitting down, getting adjusted in her seat, reaches into her purse to find a crossword puzzle to take it out before the plane takes off, and notices her unopened bag of cookies. Some of us can't even see what we have because we're so focused on what we might be losing if we don't join the world. That was Lot's problem. Lot couldn't see what it was that he had in relation to Abram, the man of promise. He only could see what the land was offering him. This text this week brought to my mind a passage of Scripture. And it really kind of sharpened the focus of this. It's something I've read all my life. You've heard this before yourself from Matthew chapter 6. This is Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount. Listen to these words. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You ever wondered why in the middle of that passage, he's talking about money, and then he starts talking about the eye, and then he goes back talking about money again? You see what he's saying? You don't tell if a man has a money problem by looking at his wealth. You do that by looking at his eyes. What is he looking at? The eye is where you perceive what is most valuable, what is most important. So if the eye is messed up, your heart and everything else will be messed up as well. Lot had an eye for the things of this world, and his life evidenced what I call the gravity principle. You remember all the way back in junior high when you were learning about the gravity principle. The bigger the world is, the stronger the pull. The larger the world is in your eyes, the stronger its pull is going to be on your life. You see the pull in Lot's life. It said in verse 10 that he saw the region toward Sodom. And then it says in the next verse, he chose for himself that region. And then it says in the verse right after that he pitched his tents near Sodom. Then you skip over a chapter, and in verse 12 of that chapter, it says that he's going to be living in Sodom. In fact, he will be taken captive when a king comes to capture the city. And then you get all the way to chapter 19. In the very first verse, it says that he was sitting in the gateway of Sodom, which means that he had actually become a leading figure in the city. And then in chapter 19, verse 16, the story that we all know, these two angels come and are announcing judgment on the city, and they tell Lot, you need to get your family and get out of this city. And it actually says, because at this point the pull of the world was so strong, that even though he knows these really are angels that are speaking to him, it says that he hesitated. And they had to grab him by the arm and drag him out of that place that had been marked by God for judgment. Lot may have been righteous in position, but he was carnal in character. There's a reason that you read through Hebrews chapter 11 and all the heroes of the faith, and he actually isn't listed there. Because he didn't walk by faith. He walked by sight. Here's the thing I want you to catch, and write this down. The carnal believer loses a lot more than he ever gains. Let me just close by reminding you how he lost a lot. First, he lost the cover of the blessing of Abraham. Second, he lost his peace of mind, because you read through Peter, and Peter talks about how he was constantly distressed by the wickedness that was always around him. Look at from the Message version in 2 Peter chapter 2. It says, surrounded by moral rot day after day after day, that righteous man was in constant torment. Who cares about how big your house is or how much your bedroom furniture costs if you can't ever sleep? He lost his ability to influence his neighbors, because Because when Lot tried to warn them of the judgment of God, they laughed at him. They knew Lot. This is a guy that would do anything for a buck. Most of all, he lost his family. And pastorally, the story makes me very sad because I can't tell you how many times I have seen the long-term consequence of a man who never thought through the impact of his rush for more stuff, his acquiring more things, now that would impact the lives of his family, taking them to places where maybe there's no strong church, taking them into a lifestyle where there's really not a community of faith. His two girls married men of Sodom. Never dawned on them to marry a man who worshiped Yahweh. They didn't think that their dad even cared about that. His two sons-in-law thought so little of their father-in-law that when he warned them of the judgment of God, they laughed at him. His own wife was so in love with the world, she disobeyed the direct instruction of God and looked back to where her heart still was. And the very last picture of Lot in Genesis is this. He's an old, poor, scared man living in a cave with his two daughters whom he has impregnated after they got him drunk. That's what I call losing a lot. And while he will be in heaven, there's a reason why nobody names their son Lot. Nobody suddenly becomes carnal. It happens over time as we neglect our eye exams. I want you to look up at the screen and see this image, this picture. This was painted by Norman Rockwell, one of America's greatest painters. And you can see on this image the front of an urban cathedral. And above the doors are these magnificent frescoes of the apostles with the Lord Jesus Christ himself in the center. And the doves are in an upward flight as if to signify the path to heaven. But you look at all of the faces of the people on the streets, and they're looking down at their feet, going their way, consumed by the worries of the world. It might be hard for you to see, but in this image, the pastor of the church is instructing a worker to put the title of his sermon on the message board for the church. And the message of his sermon, "Lift up thine eyes." The challenge today, from me to you, is to lift up your eyes. In fact, we're going to get ready and we're going to sing a song, so I want you to stand up and get ready. But my request would be from the Lord that He would be all that we see, that He would become our sole vision. Let's get ready to sing together.